Welcome to The Perfect Storm, a bi-weekly podcast for business executives and cybersecurity professionals. Industry veterans Michael Markulek and Matthew Webster chat with guests about the latest cyber news, threats, and trends, and how all of it impacts their businesses. Harbor Technology Group is a cybersecurity consulting firm that offers advisory services to the SMB. Harbor believes by taking a proactive rather than reactive approach to cybersecurity, business leaders can develop a cybersecurity program that will address external requirements, exceed client expectations, and ultimately take their organization to the next level. Harbor's innovative processes are based on industry standard frameworks that are tailored to meet the needs of small and medium-sized businesses.
Welcome back to another edition of The Perfect Storm, the cybersecurity podcast. It's a beautiful early spring day here outside of Princeton, New Jersey. Joining me today is Mark Fander from CBiz Borden Perlman. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you, Michael. Appreciate it.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about CBiz Borden Perlman, a little bit about your role there, and then we'll jump into the cyber insurance discussion.
Sure. Sure. Well, CBiz Borden Perlman is a part of CBiz. We're a publicly traded financial services firm. My role and what my bailiwick is within Borden Perlman is commercial insurance, property and casualty insurance for middle market to upper middle market organizations throughout the country and internationally.
Perfect. Perfect. And just, you know, for the record, you know, we've worked together with Borden Perlman in the past mm-hmm. around some compliance issues and around DFS 500 for the state of New York. So know your business well. What I really wanted to talk about today was, you know, cyber insurance. 5 years ago, small and medium-sized businesses, most of them didn't have cyber insurance. I'd go out and speak to CEOs, and my guess was probably less than a third of them had even considered cyber insurance. We've seen that rise. Right? You know, the numbers probably, you know, two-thirds now have coverage. There's still a gap there. And what we've seen from the insurance companies is kind of a change in the market. So if you just want to kind of lay out the cyber insurance market, how it's evolved for you know, CBiz and for your clients.
Yeah, the market, like most of the insurance market right now, is a bit of a mess. You probably have about 80 different insurers that are writing some sort of a cyber standalone policy. It's a bit of the Wild West, right? There's no, you know, what we consider an ISO form that's designated for these. It's they're all manuscript forms and they're all different. So the devil's in the details. You never know what you're going to end up with. And the market has responded. When cyber first came out, again, I use the term Wild West, it was really a throw-in coverage. We'll give you $1 million and it's going to be really cheap. And I don't think that they knew, and when they being insurance carriers, knew exactly what they had on their hands. You know, take that into today's terms, and the chickens have come home to roost. These inexpensive policies have yielded losses, significant losses for these insurance carriers. And now they are either getting out of the market or putting significant limitations on these policies. And with significant increases in premiums for said policies. So what you have is you've got clients that are contractually obligated to carry cyber insurance through some of their vendors and business associates that they're doing, and others who just know that it's good risk management and you're buying it for balance sheet protection because their currency is personal identifiable information or their currency is health information or just customer and contact information. So it runs the gamut, you know, in terms of who's purchasing this right now.
Yeah, couple things to unpack there, but let's start with the idea that, you know, early on cyber insurance was like, I say, vanilla ice cream. It was one size fit all. It was kind of a rider that got attached to your general policy. And now it's Baskin Robbins, right? Now you get 56, I think the number's 56, different varieties of cyber insurance. You can buy cyber insurance against breach. You can buy it against, you know, insider threat. You can buy it against extortion, right? Basically, ransomware is extortion. And you can buy That's extortion right. insurance. How has that evolved, right? Do clients understand this? Do you see them kind of moving the levers depending upon their business and, you know, their particular, you know, risk management style?
I'm going to say that has evolved. And I think the clients have gotten wise to what's really required to be a part of this. It's really a part as much more like more so than any other policy they have. It's really a partnership between the insured, the broker, and the insurance companies. There are different insuring agreements. There are different sublimits now of things that are covered. You'd mentioned ransomware, and we're all familiar with social engineering. And so for those companies who think, well, I really don't have any personal identifiable information. We don't keep records. We don't have credit cards. It's the IoT, right? So manufacturing, let's take that as an example. While that used to be a desirable line of business for these cyber carriers, they've actually really tightened their underwriting when it comes to manufacturing. It's up there with healthcare and financial services in terms of a challenging risk right now because of the IoT. Most of these manufacturing companies are technology driven. So all of their machinery, all of their processes, procedures are tied into this technology. And if that is shut down, it's a significant cost associated with that. And then just being able to untie all that and get back up and running from a business income, business interruption standpoint is significant. So I think we've got a smarter insured group. But I still don't think that they fully understand all of the nuances and details. And that's why when you're filling out applications for this particular coverage, you've got to have your IT vendor, whether it's in-house, whether it's third party, whoever's in charge of that stuff, helping you fill this stuff out because it becomes part of the policy, your answers to these said questions.
Yeah, and we've seen that. You know, I've seen it with our clients that, you know, what used to be a one or two page questionnaire, you know, what's your revenue? How many, you know, PII records or healthcare records do you manage? Do you take credit cards? And you were done. Now it's an 8-page questionnaire that's asking about, you know, encryption at rest and service accounts and you know, are you monitoring your DMARC for email fraud? So it's got a lot more complicated. Has that caused any pushback from clients and on the other side, are you seeing cyber insurers start to deny coverage or not issue coverage because folks don't have things like multi-factor authentication?
I think you asked two
questions. Yeah.
Different questions there. So let's take the first one and just say, are people, help me unpack that one again. Are the insureds understanding?
Yeah, do the clients, the businesses, yes, understand, yes, that when they fill this out, that they're committing to having done it, right? Do I have an incident response policy? Well, sure,
yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Right. And then all of a sudden you have a breach. There's no written policy. You know, are we seeing insurers kind of, you know, start to draw hard lines there?
Yeah, we are. And that reminds me exactly what you had asked me. You would use the example of a one or two page application and you're 100% right. You know, in this market, a complete quality cyber submission is going to be essential. And what does that mean? It's not just say, hey, here's a one or two pages and then come back to me with some questions. Partial submissions are resulting in declinations right off the bat, because what's happening is these insurance carriers are getting higher level of scrutiny on what they're willing to write. And if it's not a complete submission, they're just saying, we don't even want to mess with this because this person, this broker, this insured isn't serious. And that's a big issue. You're going to get a cyber application, right? And that's going to be detailed. It's going to be 8 pages long. And chances are you're going to get what's considered a ransomware supplemental application that you're going to need to be filled out. So that's the extra level of underwriting that's happening. You know, and be aware, because some carriers are requesting a short form renewal application. So if you've got a carrier that's already on your risk and they're requesting a short form renewal application, that may not be good enough if you're going to be marketing your risk to the balance of the insurance marketplace. So that's a big issue. We're seeing expiring terms, right? So making sure that the limits, the terms, the retentions, the semicolons versus commas are all in there that need to be in there versus expiring. So that's really a big part of it. And then lost details. Here's another big one too. the loss details aren't just we had a loss. Like the underwriters really want some specific details as to what brought about the loss and what have you done to close that potential loophole on potential future losses where this isn't going to happen again. In other words, we want to write to a zero loss ratio, and that's what they're trying to get to, is they're really trying to scrutinize these types of things. And then your second question, I think you had mentioned MFA, which I think everyone unfortunately understands what MFA is now over the last year or two, multi-factor authentication. And it is still a non-starter if you don't have that. But it's not just MFA, right? So it's not just for remote access. If the RDP has not been disabled by the MFA, that's going to be required. That there's MFA with access to cloud-based services, remote access to emails, access to backups. Right. All of these must have that multi-factor authentication. And then the other big one is what we're hearing a lot now is endpoint detection security, and having a reputable company, be the ones, with preferred vendors, if you will. And that's Carbon Black and CrowdStrike and Cisco AMP. So they've got preferred vendors. So it's not just that we do it. It's who are you using and are they on our validated list? These are higher levels than we've ever had to play with in terms of scrutiny from these underwriters.
Yeah, endpoint protection is an interesting one because we moved from antivirus, anti-malware, which was very, I'll call a lagging kind of technology, right? It was signature based. It required, something bad to happen, somebody to report it, somebody to develop a signature. And then, when you got hit with it, you could find it. Now with endpoint detection and response or managed endpoint detection and response, EDR, MDR, these systems, as you mentioned, CrowdStrike, Sophos, Carbon Black, they're actively looking at machines, right? So I spend a lot of time talking about that because it's a little bit of a game changer in terms of cybersecurity. And because of that, you're seeing insurers, now require it, not just, recommend it, but actually require it. So,
And it becomes a non-starter, right? If you don't have any of these things unfortunately I can keep going on daily backups, air gapped, encrypted, all these things that you require to be offline and, timely installation of patches. And not only that we closed a port, but that the ports are, not reopened, or if they are reopened, that they're closed each and every time because they're going to do these analysis on you. And the challenge really becomes for those insureds that are required to cover, to have this coverage, to the tune of sometimes $10 to $20 million, depending on the industry, is becoming more and more challenging. And to go back to your vendor and say, I can't get to the 10 million, I can get to five. But part of the reason I can't get to 10 is because I don't have X, Y, Z and the things, right? That's a whole different conversation as opposed to the market's just a mess.
Well, and you're seeing that side of it, which is putting more pressure on the businesses to, bring their cybersecurity profile up, their posture up. Mm-hmm. The other side of it is we've also seen, premiums double. Right, more than double in some cases, year over year, and I'm not quite sure we see an end to that because I'm not quite sure we have, actuarial data that still makes sense, right? We're still seeing big losses, especially in places like the public sector, right? Municipalities, school districts are just getting hammered, both on the cyber side, right, from the criminals. And now they're facing, triple digit, kind of increases in premiums. So I'm not sure where that ball ends, but I don't see it ending anytime soon. I don't know if you've got an opinion.
No, I mean, what we're telling when we're talking to our clients and prospects is you can expect anywhere from 25 to 100% in terms of rate increase. And now that's with a higher level of underwriting scrutiny, right, for your practices. And exclusions in certain cyber incidents, right? So cyber warfare, ransomware. I mean, another, two big ones. We already know that many of these things like social engineering, we're sublimited on these policies now. And that's really some of the big risks for some of these medium-sized businesses is that ransomware and is that social engineering. right? So we try to find coverage through the crime policy and not just the cyber policy. So there's things that can be done, but you need a, especially if this is a coverage you absolutely need in an industry, you need to be more engaged, you know, with the broker to be able to make sure that everyone understands along the continuum what you're doing, because there the opportunity for gaps in the programs. If I'm paying 100% more and I'm getting less coverage, you know, I better make sure that, you know, I'm not having any claims, or if I do that, you know, we're really buttoned up.
Right. So, you know, is there an education going on with the brokerage, the firms? You know, it used to be a couple of years ago, as we talked about, it used to be just be a rider that we attached to our general liability policies. You know, as CBIZ, Borden Perlman really focused on, you know, providing that kind of expertise, because small and medium sized businesses don't have it. Most of them don't have a chief information security officer. You mentioned an IT guy helping out, but an IT guy can't help you determine limits, can't help you determine whether you've got risk management strategies in place. Your IT guy is not going to tell you whether you're in compliance with, you know, state and federal regulations, right? So it's become a much more difficult process. And you know, where do you see your role or CBIZ's role in advising your clients?
Yeah, like every single line of coverage, we always aim to create as much transparency around the process and around the need, you know, lift the kimono, if you will, on all of our, you know, insureds and what they're doing. So spending a lot of time helping our insureds understand what the risks are, and then just overlaying that versus what they're doing in terms of their business. So as I mentioned, you know, if it's a healthcare account, you know, working our way down the potential dangerous areas that a healthcare account might have, or a financial service. And now we're starting to have these same types of manufacturing clients with those kinds of questions, right? So the term bricking, right? So where a piece of equipment is rendered inoperable because of a ransomware or malware or some kind of an attack. Generally not covered, right? So really just spending time understanding the business, understanding how this coverage works. Unfortunately, not every broker understands the cyber. We fortunately, not myself, but have some really super smart people in our organization that understand the ins and outs, and that's their bailiwick. They spend all their time in this area. So yeah, we have to educate our clients, and frankly, the clients, they need it and they want it, and they understand the process behind it and why it's important.
To pivot a little bit, one of the things that I've been talking to our clients about is kind of minimizing risk, right? We talked about PII, we talked about, you know, healthcare records, you know, credit card records, if you're processing credit cards, whatever it happens to be. But, you know, I was working with clients that had retained employee information, you know, banking information and social security number for employees that weren't there, right? You know, I think there's a real opportunity for businesses to kind of look at what they're keeping, right? This idea that, you know, we have a digital attic and we can keep just pushing data into it. While in some ways you'd like to go back and look at emails from 10 years ago, but if it includes PII, maybe it's time to get rid of them. Have you talked to any of your clients about that, or talked to, you know, about minimizing their footprint, minimizing their risk, you know, reducing that that cyber liability?
Yes, I'm actually working on one of my, I'm going to say it's one of my larger cyber clients right now, in terms of that's one of their biggest spends is their, technically it's a tech E&O policy, but the record retention policy, you know, we're really honing in, and the because we know the underwriters are with the record retention policy and understanding, you know, what is the policy, and how are these things protected? And are they necessary? And if they're not necessary, let's get rid of them, right? It's like anything else. I can't loss control every single thing, or we just wouldn't open our doors on a daily basis. But the low-hanging fruit, right? So, you know, I'm not going to send, you know, take a construction account. I'm not going to send anybody up without fall protection, right? Because it's absolutely necessary. But we got to get up on that roof, or we got to get up on that scaffold, we got to get up on that structure so that we can earn our livings and keep moving forward. But we're not going to do it without the, you know, the right protection in place, and cyber is just no different. But the record retention policy is something that the carriers are hitting on very, very heavily this year. And if we don't need it, let's get rid of it.
Right. Yeah. definitely a direction that we see things going. And, and I spend a lot of time with, you know, small and medium sized businesses really talking about risk management. And cyber, you know, information security has always been outside of that risk management process. Most of them do a good job with financial risk and, you know, operational risk. But, you know, now information technology and the reliance on information technology and the cyber threat has driven us, you know, back into the boardroom, back at a higher level. You know, so it's interesting. I think there's an education process that's going on right now.
Yeah. Well, speaking of education, I mean, that just leads right into you and I both know the biggest issue is still the end user. It's still the employee. Right. And if we're not educating, and this is another thing that carriers want to make sure that there is routine employee training to prevent cybercrime, you know, and they've got to educate employees about the threats, the preventative tactics. And, you know, we all do it. We go through tests, right? You know, you get an email and you're not sure, you click a link and you get an email back saying, hey, that was a test and you failed. Right. So it's still human error is the biggest issue in this industry, and you can't overtrain and you can't spend enough time talking about it. I can promise you it is an expensive road to go down when someone clicks the wrong link and ransomware or malware or, you know, sort of any of the things that you don't want to happen, because forensically what has to happen is it's time consuming. The ROI, the soft costs associated with people's time really just builds up very, very quickly.
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting because, you know, as you said, 90% of all cyber incidents, according to Verizon, you know, data breach report are caused by a human doing something wrong, clicking on something, downloading something, going to a website they shouldn't be at. If that's the case, why don't we train the employees? You know, we wouldn't allow somebody to go out and operate on a roof or get behind the wheel of a truck or operate a piece of manufacturing equipment without training. And yet we hand our employees, you know, $3,000 laptops, access to all of our data, and we say, go. And it just, it baffles me that we don't have better training. And I'll give you my training spiel, but you know, training is not PowerPoint and donuts once a year. You know, training needs to be relevant. It needs to be engaging and it needs to be frequent. If you're not training at least once a month, you know, your employees aren't listening.
You're beating the right drum and you should, because you gave the number. I've seen it 80%, 90%.
Yeah.
And that just tells me that most of this is preventable. You remember the days somebody would leave a set of keys with a USB and people would say, oh, somebody lost their keys. Let me plug this in. I might find out who it is. Or a CD-ROM. You remember the CD-ROMs? They used to say family vacation pictures and somebody would put it in their laptop and boom, everything's released. So these bad actors have gotten smarter. They're smarter than you. They're smarter than me. And they have the time. This is a $33 billion industry. It's in their best interest to keep staying ahead of everybody.
Yeah, they're staying ahead of us. And at the end of the day, I speak on cybersecurity. So, you know, one of the jokes I tell is, you know, who fell for the Nigerian prince, you know, 20 years ago, right?
That's right.
And everybody laughs at me. And I'm like, no, that's exactly what business email compromise is today. It just doesn't look like the Nigerian prince. It looks like the landlord that you're renting the building from. And next thing you know, 3-4 months of you know, lease or rental payments are offshored and you're never going to see them again. So it's a constant battle for small and medium sized businesses. I think, you know, cyber insurance is a great way to mitigate the risk, but you need to understand what you're buying. It's not a silver bullet. It's an important part of a risk management strategy. And you need to, you know, go into it with both eyes open because it can be expensive and you want to make sure that you've got the right kinds of coverage. I'll give you a couple minutes to kind of give, you know, any final thoughts that you have on the topic.
Yeah, I would say two quick things. Trends for 2023, nation state supply chain threats. We already know supply chain is stressed pretty dramatically. Keep that in mind. Organizations with their vulnerabilities that they may already have on a supply chain, and not just your direct supply chain. Where you fit in the supply chain continuum, if you're a part of a part, right? So that's a big thing. Again, we talked about the significant underwriting standards being tightened. Make sure that you're you're getting out ahead 120 days on this particular coverage so that things are buttoned up. And then regulations, lots of regulations coming out. I know Virginia in 2021 and I think Colorado both basically tighten that legislation that emulates that California Consumer Privacy Act. So that's two more states. And again, remember, you don't have to have employees in those states to be, you know, bound by those particular regulations. Elevated ransomware concerns, and then I'd say heightened business email compromise risks. That's the emails are so vulnerable and people are so busy and stressed and we all working from home or working from somewhere else and you're just clicking to try and get work done. So these scams are the biggest way for these bad actors to get to your employees. So making sure that training is there and you know, find that relationship, that broker or that IT group that really has your best interest at heart and is willing to educate you and spend the time. If you got somebody just saying they're going to save you a couple bucks, penny wise, pound foolish, find somebody you can partner with and somebody who's really got your best interest at heart.
Right. Great advice, Mark. So I got Mark Vander from CBiz Borden Perlman. I've been talking a little bit about cyber insurance. You know, we're Harbor Technology Group, and every one of our podcasts ends with me asking the guest, kind of give us your favorite harbor, your favorite beach location, that secluded spot, that one particular harbor. When we were doing a little intro, but where's that one particular harbor for you? And is there a cold beer I can get while I'm there?
There's a few, and if you meet me there, my wife and son and I, we spent a lot of time in Cape May. We love Cape May, and we always make sure that at some point when we're in Cape May, we head over to Sea View Inn for some wings and some cold beers over at Sea View. So we really enjoy going to Cape May and spending time there. And a little gem I'll tell everybody, if you go to Atlantic City, underneath the Tropicana is a little hole in the wall called Tony's Baltimore Grill, and it is the best pizza and meatballs. And you'll probably either sit down next to a casino executive, and on the other side, you'll be one of Atlantic City's, finest citizens. And the conversations are great, and the beer is cold, and the food is tremendous. So those are my two spots, and they're both down the Jersey Shore. So
that is absolutely perfect, especially given that the weather seems to be breaking here in Jersey, and we'll be back down the shore soon. Mark, thank you for your time today. Thanks for hopping on with us. Look forward to kind of continuing the conversation and look forward to working together in the future.
Yeah, Michael, thank you for what you do to protect your clients and, really make sure that, that they are in the best place they can be. So kudos to you and to Harbor Technology Group. So thank you for having me.
Great. Thank you.
Harbor's innovative processes are based on industry standard frameworks that are tailored to meet the needs of small and medium-sized businesses. We would also like to thank Tom Marshall for the original music. Yes, that Tom Marshall from Fish fame. Harbor's portfolio of services is designed to meet the cybersecurity needs of small and medium enterprises. We offer a range of services from cyber risk advisory to VCSO consulting to meet specific security requirements without putting a strain on your technology budget. If you like what you heard here, be sure to subscribe and share with your friends and colleagues. We release new podcasts every other week and are available on Spotify and Apple. You can reach us through our website if you have additional questions or suggest a great harbor we should mention on our next show.